Veritex Community Bank Studios. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
Bees Blank, I'm Branham. Brendan behind the glass. Killer Bees on ESPN at 97.5 and ESPN at 92.5. How come everybody likes Nick Caserio now? Like, he goes on and has a little bit of personality, gives you a little bit of information, shows you he can be a little bit of a nice guy, and now people like the dude.
I don't know that they like the dude, and I don't think that they trust him fully yet, but I think that he took the first step in trying to create maybe a solid relationship with the fan base and the media. And I also think, more so than that, as it relates to the guy that he was defending the most, I think what he really was trying to do was damage control. I think he took his first year, obviously, as we know, and he was trying to get the lay of the land. But the one thing that I think that was clearly established for him was the fact that he ain't that Jack Easterby's not going anywhere. Like, there really is a relationship between Jack and Cal. And so I think that what he did was, as he, you know, because we talked about this, as an organization, even before Nick Caserio got in there, there was a perception that the organization cared way too much about what people were saying about them, thought about them, the media, and everybody else. I think after taking kind of a survey over the course of the year, he realized the things that we find out for you guys on a weekly basis when we have national people on. There is a negative perception about this franchise, and it starts with Jack Easterby. And so I think that he realizes he's in a catch-22. He would love to get rid of that negative, but he can't because he's the best friend of the owner. So the best case he could do to try and smooth that over in any way, shape, or form was to do what he did yesterday.
There's two things you said there. I want to discuss both of those and have a conversation on both of them. The first thing is the importance of being open to the fan base. Like, that's great from a PR point of view. Like, maybe it brings people back to NRG Stadium somewhat quicker, although to me, and we've talked about this all the time, the greatest marketing tool is winning. So the fact that he's a nice guy, you know, it's not going to necessarily change a whole lot in the sense of, like, they're still not winning games. And I talk about this all the time. Like, it's great being nice. It's a wonderful thing to see that from, like Bill O'Brien got crushed for not being a nice guy. But it doesn't lead to wins. I mean, look at the biggest jerks in all of sports. They're usually winners. Bill Belichick is a jerk. He wins. He wins a lot. Nick Saban's a jerk. He wins. He wins a lot. So, like, it's nice to see the personality side. It's nice to see the human side. I understand from, like, a Caserio point of view, let me show the fan base a little bit of something. Let me open up a little bit. But at the same time, that doesn't translate to victories. All of the flaws that Nick Caserio had before he was a nice guy yesterday morning are still the flaws that Nick Caserio has, but the perception of the city on Caserio, and look, the mistrust is still somewhat there. I think there is hesitation that the Caserio is the guy, but like in terms of like the approval rating for Nick Caserio, like, it went up yesterday after talking a little bit and showing a little personality and a little bit of normalcy when, at the end of the day, it didn't really say a whole lot of him as a general manager.
But Jeremy, here's the thing. He's setting the table for the fact that at a certain point, he may be able to get separation. He may be able to say, hey, look, in terms of, because there might be, and I don't know if it's ever going to be push comes to shove, you got to decide between one or the other, but the way he can set the table is, hey, look, I didn't sign up. I didn't pick this guy. I didn't bring him here. He's not my guy per se. We work together.
You're talking about Easterby.
Yeah. We work together in New England. Now, if he just minds his P's and Q's and does the things that I just set forth for the media and everybody else that he does, we'll be fine. But if he starts going back to doing too much, going too far, or at a certain point, if I point out Jack tried to do this or Jack tried to do that, now I can get the fan base to be more behind me than behind him. I don't know that it'll influence Cal, but I think that from public perception standpoint, he was able to kind of draw the separate. Look, we knew that Jack and Bill O'Brien were joined at the hip.
Yeah.
I think the one thing he was trying to do yesterday was explain where he and Jack are not.
See, I didn't get that read at all. Like, I felt like they were more connected to the hip based on what he said. Like, he's going to war for his guy. Like, he's taking one for the team. He's telling you to back off my man. Like, that's the reaction that I got. That's the feedback that I got. I didn't feel like there was separation between Caserio and Easterby. To me, it felt like it was more connection.
He pointed out very specifically that Jack's not dealing with football decisions.
Right, right. But to me, that's like, okay, like, settle down on Jack, guys. He's no longer in a part of football decisions, so lay off my dude. Lay off my man. Like, that's how I heard it.
I don't know if it was lay off my dude as much as, to me, I heard it as, hey, note to the rest of the league. Jack's not involved in football anymore. This is my show.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to kind of mend fences for everybody that thinks it's a negative that he's still here.
I think that that's definitely like a message across the salvo, right? Like, I think that he is trying to send the message to people who are outside of the circle. I believe that Jack Easterby's not had a say in the personnel at all since Nick Caserio took over. I'm not so sure that Jack Easterby necessarily... I think he had once craved that and wanted that, and he definitely did at one point. But well, after it backfired the way that he did, I think he was happy to take his hands off of it.
I think he realized he was in over his head because Lance and John were talking about it on the bench this morning. And Lance, I don't know if it was Lance or John that said their sources said that he was the guy that adamantly said, you've got to jump out on a limb and take a chance with Laremy Tunsil and go trade for him. And don't worry about the fact that you won't have an extension for him. And it's just something you have to do. And then it backfired miserably when he held them hostage, essentially, and said, you either make me the highest paid left tackle in the game by a substantial amount, or I'm going to walk and you're going to look like idiots.
Well, and also not doing it whenever they traded for him.
That's what
too.
I'm saying. No, like, that's what that, when the trade was kind of in limbo, they were wondering if they should do it or not. And the Texans were apprehensive about, hey, without an extension, we shouldn't do this deal. And Easterby, as John and Lance described it, literally was getting up like on the table going, sometimes you got to take the leap of faith. You got to do this, got to do this, got to do this. And then realized you didn't have to do
See,
it.
There's two ways to look at the Easterby effect, if you want to call it that, too. And Caserio said that the criticism of Easterby is a bit unjust. I'd say the criticism is fair because he played a large part in what is the ultimate the demise of where this organization is currently at. And to your point, a dude who was severely underqualified for the position. So, like, you can't have the Easterby discussion without, you know, setting it up. Like, there's a reason the organization's where it's at. There's a reason that Nick Caserio is trying to cover up for the mistakes that Jack Easterby made. There's a reason that Nick Caserio is trying to bring this team back from the grave to be a relevant organization again in the NFL. And a lot of that downfall is basically on Jack Easterby and then also the connection that he had with Bill O'Brien. I do believe that Easterby's no longer part personnel. I believe he's not touching the 53-man roster. I don't think he necessarily wants to touch it anymore. So, like, the conversation you can have, one of them is, like, the totality of what Jack Easterby symbolizes in this organization. The second conversation you can have, though, is, like, okay, what is this organization going to look like going forward? And can Jack Easterby's influence within the organization be something that is a negative going forward? I still think you can win with Jack Easterby going forward if he's not a part of the 53, if he's not touching the personnel, like if he's just worrying about business operations, if he's just being a team chaplain, if he's just your culture CEO, like you can win with that dude around, even though he has a negative, you know, like a negative symbol within the Houston Texans organization.
Look, as long as he minds his P's and Q's, like I said, and stays out, keeps his hands out of the kitchen. Sure. There's a way to peacefully coexist, but I think that you don't know what that effect is still going to be out there in terms of agents, players, coaches, and people that are thinking about joining this franchise and signing up on the dotted line to be a part of it. They're going to have questions. I mean, look, Caserio admitted there are people coaches in the interview process right now that have legit questions about Jack Easterby. Again, that's why I go back to, this is why he had to address it with the media. This is why he had to send a clear message out there to try and dispel that this is a negative, that he is still a part of the franchise.
I think that when you look at it going forward, that's to me the biggest value and the biggest weight of what Easterby still in the building, you know, carries. He doesn't carry like building the 53-man roster. He doesn't carry with the coaches that are currently there. Certainly has the ear of Cal McNair. I think he's still well connected with Nick Caserio. But to your point, that's where the negative value of the Jack Easterby is. There's two, really. One of them's from the fan base because he symbolizes the downfall of the Houston Texans organization. That is a flat-out fact. When people see Jack Easterby, they are reminded of where this franchise was and where it is now. They're reminded of the King's ransom they gave up for Laremy Tunsil and then making the mistake of not giving him the contract extension as part of that trade. They remember DeAndre Hopkins being shipped out of here for David freaking Johnson. That's what people see when they look at Jack Easterby.
That's a second round pick.
And sure, a second round pick. You're right, but I mean,
well, when
but
Diggs,
I don't even think people look at that.
Diggs got a first, it matters.
You know, it does, and I get your point. But from like when the fan base looks at Jack Easterby, they don't think of the second rounder. All they think about is David Johnson.
I don't think fair, I don't fair even, unfair. I would say it doesn't even get to that point. They just think about the fact that you got rid of DeAndre Hopkins. It doesn't matter what you got in return. You were responsible in part. And that's the thing that we constantly go back to, that I constantly bring up when you and I are having these conversations. Whether it be Bill O'Brien saying, it was me and Jack in my backyard talking about the Hopkins trade. It was me and Jack hammering out the details of the Tunsil trade. It was me and Jack on draft day, and the reason why I had the tantrum and I punched the table and I looked so stupid on national TV is because me and Jack were having an issue with our internet or something like that. But the reason why when I talk about a black cloud, what comes with a black cloud? Shade. And the shade that's still left over, even though Bill O'Brien's black cloud is gone, the shade is Easterby. And you can't get away from and escape the shade.
No, you're right. And there, the two ways that I look at it, from the fan base point of view and then the rest of the league point of view, because the Texans are going to be Patriots South, whether Cal McNair tells you they're not or whatever the case is going to be. But the Nick Caserio saying what a great organization it is and an organization you should model. And I'm not even saying that Nick Caserio is wrong. But there is very much in Houston and within that organization, whether it's Nick Caserio, whether it's Jack Easterby, they're going to be Patriots South. There is a Patriots circle with the Houston Texans. So when you look across the league, there's dudes in the Patriots circle, whether it's Brian Flores, whether it's Jerod Mayo, whether it's Josh McDaniels. Those dudes are in the Patriots circle. Romeo Crennel's still in this building as an assistant to the head coach, whatever his role is. Outside of that circle, you have everybody else. Doug Peterson's the example that I used yesterday as the everybody else. Best candidate for a head coaching position on the market. But whenever you have anybody outside of the Patriots circle, they're going to look at Jack Easterby and see what the fans see. A dude that was meddling way too much, that traded away the best player on the team and perhaps the best wide receiver in the NFL. Part of the reason why Deshaun Watson, who at the time didn't have all the allegations we knew about, that was a top five quarterback coming off a year in which he led the NFL in passing, Jack Easterby was an influence to make Deshaun Watson not want to play in the Texans organization. And whether these things are like fair or unfair, that's not the question. The question is the perception from everybody outside of the Patriots circle when they look at this organization.
Jeremy, it's also being a mole, right? And it's a mole that's connected. And the fact that when you talk about a mole, I give you another example right up the highway in Dallas. Mark Cuban had an analytics guy that was a mole. Mark Cuban's analytics mole was a guy that only talked to Cuban, that Rick Carlisle had a problem with, but that was talking to Luka Doncic and was talking to the players. And correct, stop me when it doesn't sound like Jack Easterby. And was there at practices and was talking to the players on the side but not telling the coach what he was doing, but reporting back to management. When you start having a guy like that, it's a very negative, very, very volatile situation that can go south in a hurry.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you still have here, perception-wise. Now, Nick's going to tell you till he's blue in the face, it's not like that anymore. But I don't think that just because of what he said yesterday, the fan base goes, oh, okay, well, it's different now. It's fixed. I'm okay.
The approval rating of Nick Caserio went up yesterday.
That's
because
fine.
He was a nice guy and said some nice things on the radio and showed a little personality when it didn't change a darn thing. It's amazing what a little bit of normalcy and personality can do. The conversation that I want to have, though, is like, okay, the Jack Easterby thing has happened. We're right here, January 19th, 2022. Texans are looking for their fifth head coach in NFL history. How do the Texans go forward with what they currently have in place? Because Jack Easterby's going nowhere. Nick Caserio has all of the reign to do whatever he wants. He just fired a first-year head coach. He has all the job security in the world. I think that's very, very obvious. Like, how does this look like going forward? Also, I want to ask you, Houston, did your opinion of Caserio change over the last week, whether it was an appearance on the Highway to Hell, whether it was an appearance during his press conference after he fired David Culley? Did the comments he say, was it something that brought more connection with he and Jack Easterby, or is it a separation of the two? And can you even win with Jack Easterby around? 713-780-ESPN. You know the drill. 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joe on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. The discussion continues next. Killer Bees, ESPN975, ESPN925.
Hey, guys, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about Fitz Roofing. Look, they're dedicated to Houston and Houstonians. That's all you need to know. So, yes, their name says Roofing. And Corey is the vice president of the Houston Roofing Association. So he carries the clout and credibility of being respected for being someone that's an expert in his field. But more so than anything else, he knows how important it is to take care of Houstonians. Word of mouth and word of a job well done can do as much good for the company as anything that they can do on a daily basis. So therefore, it means a lot to them. They take care of it with the best ratings in the business, using the best products in the business. They have the best warranties in the business. And on top of everything else, they do free, no obligation inspections on anything that you need done around your house. And you can go to FITZRoofing.com and you can figure out all the ways they can help you, from a fence in the yard to some home repairs to anything to do with your roof. On top of that, they do these free, no-obligation inspections that cost you absolutely nothing. They come to you. They tell you what they can do. Then they go back with the rest of their day. But if you want them to come back and do the work, rest assured you're going to get the best in the business that are going to take care of you every step of the way. 832-521-3001 is Fitz Roofing, and they are going to take care of you. Check them out for that free, no-obligation inspection today. Fitz Roofing, making a difference one home at a time.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
All right, talking about Nick Caserio, apparently he's more likable now. His approval rating went up. Mendez is texting in, 713-780-ESPN, and maybe I didn't do a great job of painting the picture. 713-780-3776, the HRMP listener line call. Number to call, number to text. Why is he a nice guy now? I missed out. Thanks, Mendez. We went over on the flagship, and he was just...
No, use my... I like you using my term.
You've been like... Yeah, he went on with them.
I like it.
And he did show some personality. I'm willing to admit that. I'm probably a little bit more pro Nick Caserio. At least Brendan and Joel think so. Than Brendan and Joel. Maybe I'm the pro Nick Caserio voice.
I defended you yesterday. He's the one that said that you sound...
No,
like
I'm not saying it's like a criticism.
Go get Kool-Aid together.
Well, I feel like my opinion of where I'm at with Nick Caserio, I feel like it's less than I think what the voices that are coming out of my mouth say and indicate. And I think y'all both like kind of said that, and I think it's a fair assessment.
It's a tone of voice thing more than a what you say thing about Caserio. You just sound like a fan of him, even when you're criticizing him.
Well, there we go. So, like, maybe I'm the Nick Caserio truther of the three of us, or however we want to spin that.
I've talked to people that do what we do at other places, including the Highway to Hell, and I've been told that behind the scenes, Nick Caserio thinks that you sound smart, that you are very well spoken.
I would agree with him.
And that he really likes the way you handle press conferences. So I just think that there's a mutual respect there that maybe builds that into a potential friendship.
I would like to think that there's a mutual respect between Nick Caserio and I, but I don't know if he even knows my name. Although sometimes during during his press conferences, I feel like he's talking directly to us, because the way he answers the comments about the headsets is almost like the things that we're talking about. And I'm not trying to like toot our own horn and saying he's listening to the Killer Bees, but sometimes whenever he answers certain questions, it feels like it's directed at our criticism of Nick Caserio. But anyways, that's why he's a nice guy now, Mendez, is because he showed a little personality, he showed a little normalcy, and that's it, really. Like, he was a little bit candid, and that's pretty much it.
But I'm curious from the listener's perspective, what he did yesterday, did that change your opinion and give you a likability factor that upped his approval rating? Because I think that a lot of people read through that and they go, okay, I see what you're doing here. Nice try. But really, for me, it's just like when you get a player, right? You can say all the right things to be a great dude with the Houston media and the fan base. But if you don't perform when you're on the court or the field, then it means nothing to me. So you can say all the things you said yesterday about Jack Easterby. Now go have a great draft. Go get a head coach. Go have a great draft, and we're going to be just fine. But if you're worried about that being something that's going to be important in your approval rating with me, I'm a Houston fan. I've been through a lot.
See, that's where I stand too. Like, it doesn't affect my approval rating of Nick Caserio, the words that he said. It doesn't affect your approval rating. And maybe I'm off base here, but 713-780-3776. Brendan, where do you stand on that? Do you stand with like Caserio showing a little personality more than he's ever showed before, a little bit of like candidness for the first time in pretty much ever? Do you feel like his approval rating went up a little bit?
I've seen a little bit of it on Twitter.
Yeah, that's where I've seen it.
I'm so cautious. Like, I think Twitter is a terrible
barometer of truth.
Yeah, of where people really stand. I think Twitter can be... did you guys use Reddit at all?
Very, very little.
I think it can be a little bit like Reddit when it comes to sports. I think you can run into, like, especially in basketball, but in any sport, like, just people all voicing the same opinion.
But here's my, like, stance with Twitter, because I agree with you. I don't think it's always a great pulse of the city. I think there's a lot of things go into, like, figuring out what the pulse of the city is. But I feel that Twitter is usually more negative than positive. So if you're seeing like more positive and an uptick in positivity, like I'm willing to take that a little bit more as truth.
Stop. You're talking about just as it relates to the Texans, right?
No, I mean pretty much in everything.
You think Twitter is more about positive than negative?
No, that's not what I said. I said more about negativity than positivity. I said that, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you sure he said that?
He's shaking his head yes.
It's what I heard.
Yeah.
Okay, because I was like, wait a minute. Like, in our experiences alone, it is the most negative, volatile atmosphere I've ever seen in my life.
Exactly. And that's where my stance is, to where, like, if you're seeing positivity, I feel like you can take that a little bit more as truth than the negative stuff that you see. But the question that I wanted to ask, because you bring up a great analogy about how there's a black cloud hanging over Easterby and that it creates shadows. But look, Jack Easterby's not going anywhere. Like, we might be a little bit off base on, like, I feel that Casario defending Jack Easterby was a showing that, like, they're connected, that that's his boy, that he's not going anywhere. You're saying it's a separation of the two. But even if that were to happen at some point, that's still pretty far down the road. I want to have the conversation about going forward. Like, what does this organization look like going forward with Jack Easterby still inside the building?
I think that's exactly what he's trying to establish.
Yep.
Like, we don't know what we're never going to know, or very few will know, in terms of what goes on behind closed doors at NRG. But what he wants everybody to know is, this is my show and I'm running it. And however it was with Bill O'Brien, however it was that created this negative atmosphere and this black cloud, I'm here to start trying to get out from under that shade and get away from it and tell you guys, hey, when you're doing business with the Houston Texans now, it starts and it finishes with Nick Caserio. Jack Easterby is going to give you positive messages and note cards and be there to hand out the game balls. And maybe even, I might even change that if I have my druthers. But I've seen this happen before in franchises that I've worked for. And I think that it's something that a lot of people feel like has to be done just so they can conduct normal business on a daily basis. I mean, I can tell you stories about how Rafael Stone and Tad Brown were so adamant about being a part of the team that they created their own locker room right next to the Rockets locker room, that they wore the same practice gear the Rockets wore, and they went out on game days on the court and shot around with the players pregame until Carroll Dawson, who was the general manager at the time, went, guys, that's going to stop. And it's going to stop immediately because it's a really negative perception. And as Carroll does business on a daily basis, and suddenly you want to bring the legal counsel in and the CEO of the team, and they're like, are those the two clowns that were shooting around last night when we were in town to play you guys? It doesn't help you do business. It doesn't. It's not a positive. And that's just like a brush by analogy. But it's not as big on the magnitude of a Jack Easterby, but it's similar in the fact that when we talked about it, we made fun of it at the time when they're handing out a game ball after the Jacksonville game, and Jack is front and center and way too close and way too in the limelight, and he's trying to pull in Nick Caserio, and he's trying to do the things that he does when we hear the media talk about, oh, Jack was at practice again today. Oh, I was covering practice. He couldn't have been more visible, you know, rah-rahing the guys and everything like that. It's a negative. He's trying to be a positive to the team, but the overall outside perception is it's a massive negative.
That bothered me so much when he tried to give Caserio the game ball after that week one win. That bothered me so much. 713-780-3776. Aggie Matt saying, I couldn't care less about his personality. If he wins, he'll be liked no matter what he says or does. That's in all sports. That I completely agree. Mm-hmm. Like, I've seen people be positive about Nick Caserio's, like, personality yesterday. And it's like, dude, come on. Bill Belichick has no personality. He wins Super Bowls. Give me that over personality. Nick Saban's the dullest coach in all of college football. Give me that. He wins national championships over personality. I couldn't care less that he was honest. I couldn't care less that he was truthful. I couldn't care less that he showed that personality. Give me a dude that's going to win and a GM that's going to make good moves after good moves after good moves. Not that he sounds like he can go up to the bar with you and have a little bit of a beer.
But, Jeremy, this is what I'm talking about. The fact that we just got done saying over the last 2 weeks, hey, look, if you're looking for truth serum every time these guys get a microphone in front of them, you're missing it because it's not going to happen. And they don't owe you anything, and they don't have to do this. But now suddenly, because he did this yesterday, you take it all at face value thinking he just spoke the truth. He told us exactly how it is. We're going to believe it, lock, stock, and barrel 100%. And now we know we can move on with the rest of our lives because all is good in Texanville. BS. I mean, he's going to feed you what he wants to feed you, and he's going to hope that you buy it and you believe it and you change your ways because of it. But at the end of the day, does that change my opinion and think that's how it actually is in Never Ever Land over there at NRG? No. hell no.
I think that's what bothered me so much about his transparency about being open for business at number three, too. What was the fact that there's definitely an ulterior motive there, that there's a reason that he's sending the message. Like, Lamont and I had a good conversation on Twitter yesterday after the show discussing that. And am I nitpicking that? Yeah, I probably am. But the reason that I'm nitpicking it, the reason that I'm bothering it, is because we're like all hook, line, and sinker. What he says, oh, yeah, Texans open for business at number three. And that could be true, but the dude's sending a message, and you're the one falling for it. And I think that's what bothers me about that. And that, you know, that segment of the conversation about number three was that there's obviously an ulterior motive there. We obviously can't trust the dude. He hired David Culley, for goodness sakes.
He likes puppets. He likes a head coach that's a puppet that does exactly what he thinks. He wants to play the media like puppets, yeah, too. It's the same way, again, with what I know best. I know Daryl and I know Tad, and I know that they create puppets in the media because they're controllable. And this is what he's trying to do. If I flip you a bone or I tell you these messages, oh, I need you to buy it and believe it and then sell it for me. I need you to turn right around and in your sports report tonight, Randy McAvoy or whoever, I need you to turn around and sell it to the folks that this is exactly how it is at NRG. And I can't tell you how many times that Daryl and Tad would chuckle behind the scenes going, hey, we're setting up another one of these watch parties where we're going to go have dinner and watch with bloggers and you know, military ranks and honks that want to be broadcasters or want to be writers. And guess what? We got them. The minute we buy them dinner and sit and watch a game with them, we know the next time we don't want them to write something or we call them and tell them, hey, write this, they're going to go, yes, sir, thank you, can I have another? And they're going to go do it, and it works.
And that's where I'm at. Like, he went into that press conference knowing he was going to say that, knowing the reaction he was going to get. It's very calculated. He said it unprompted like three or four different times. Like, it just bothers me. They're like, okay, now let's send his message. I just have something. It just makes me feel wrong for whatever reason. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Well, Sugarland baseball team, the AAA affiliate for the Houston Astros, they have a new name. You've heard it by now, Space Cowboys. Do you like it? We discuss it next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Turn down for what?
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I'm a space cowboy, bet you are ready for that.
Sugarland has a new nickname, AAA affiliate for the Houston Astros, just down the road. Your neck of the woods, Joel. You're wearing your Skeeter's hat, the now defunct.
I'm wearing it for a reason. The stadium's real close to the house, and I had mentioned this to you a couple months ago that I had heard rumblings this may happen. I could not be, and I think the residents of Sugarland have kind of come together in unison to say they're not a fan of this name change.
Yeah, we had a few texts already because we teased it going to break. Are you a fan of the name change? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. I don't think you're going to get a stronger take than Chris's. Chris said he sent us some emojis with a thumb down, Space Cowboys, dumb AF, Chris. I like the name. I like the name more than the Skeeters. I like the name. Here's why I like the name.
You get a D.
Two reasons.
That's not passing.
I love whenever a name is synonymous and has like meaning for the city. And both words in this nickname have meaning to the city. Cowboys are very much rampant throughout the city of Houston. That's cool to tie into that cowboy angle. And then obviously space is something that's very,
it's gotta roll
very
off the
big.
Tongue, Jeremy.
Space cowboy? We just heard a song. Steve Miller singing about space cowboys. That doesn't roll off the tongue. Absolutely
that
rolls off
the
tongue.
That was the Steve Miller band, the first one.
And they're going, that was a Steve Miller band, the song that we played?
No, the first one he played was not.
The Space
the
Cowboys?
The second one was.
Yeah.
That's not Steve Miller band.
Pretty sure that's Steve Miller.
No, I want to bet. Song right there is not the Space
what is,
Cowboys.
What does it say on the link that you
were
provided?
That song is maybe called Space Cowboys? Go to Steve Miller Band's greatest hits. The song isn't called Space Cowboy. It's the first lines of the song.
That was the lyric. That's not the name of the song.
The YouTube video does say it's Steve Miller Band.
Yes. And they're wrong.
Okay.
I would know. Believe me. Anybody that wants to chime in and tell me that that's the Steve Miller Band song that mentioned Space Cowboy, you are going to get bombarded with an F.
What if you're wrong?
That's fine. I will put whatever you want on it that is not Steve Miller. All I'm just telling you right now. But I think that with all, look, I understand The Astros are looking to make money out of their AAA team, and if they any kind of rebranding, and especially how popular minor league hats and logos are, you can make money, right? But it has to roll off the tongue. It's like the Trash Bandits. One of the they're in Arkansas, I think they are. And I think they might even be a low-level affiliate of the Astros. And it's like a raccoon in a trash can. But Trash Bandits is quick. You can say it quickly. But if you go, hey, I'm going to the Space Cowboys game tonight. It has to roll off the tongue. I get it. They were looking for a space tie-in, too, so that it connects them. What about the shuttles? What about the space balls? If you want to go, you know, something like that. Like the old, and the way I was thinking about this was Mel Brooks had a movie called Spaceballs.
Yeah.
But also, when they were affiliated with the Quad City River Bandits, and people that have listened to me over the years know one of my favorite all-time minor league logos is the Quad City River Bandits. It was a baseball with that bandit handkerchief on the bottom half of the baseball. And it was a bad. I got several hats like that. It's a badass logo. So what you could do is just kind of tie that into the space ball, a baseball, but you're going, you know, with throwing through space with some flames or something like that. Do something like to put a helmet on it. Do some things like that. But Space Cowboys to me doesn't flow.
Neither does Knickerbockers. Neither does Supersonics. That,
and again, what you're going to get is a nickname because that's why they shortened it to Knicks.
Sure.
So you also have the Dallas Cowboys. So I don't like the fact that the Space Cowboys, if they shorten it, they're going to go, I'm going to the Cowboys game tonight. No, you're not.
Now, I think when you look at this, too, with name changes, it usually has a lot to do with, merchandise. Like, are you going to sell the hats? Or are you going to sell the T-shirts? And I think you will. And I don't know if the logo that I've seen circulating on Twitter is going to be the real logo. But this is going to sell lots of merch. I believe that people are going to like, it's not going to affect you going to Sugarland games or not, like what their nickname is. And I like that it's now tied to space, just like the Houston Astros organization is. Let's do something fun real quick. Let's have a draft of the best nicknames in sports. How do you want this draft order to be, by the way, Brendan? Brendan's the boss here, so.
We probably should have determined this ahead of time.
Yeah, let's just go around the horn. You can start, I'll go.
I say Joel goes first.
Okay, yeah, he likes going first. He's made that very clear.
I mean, I
am.
There are
12
best.
Days to Christmas.
Wait a minute, time out. So we're just going to pick our best nickname of all time in sports?
With three rounds, yeah. Snake draft, obviously.
There's not a lot of good ones in minor leagues, Joel. You mentioned one already.
I have a lot.
No, there are some really good ones in the minor leagues. Well, I'm going to say it because of the fact that from a logo perspective, and I'm a big logo guy. My dad was an artist and a graphic artist, and I've designed logos even through college. And I'm big on, I collect hats, and a lot of them are just because the logo's really cool.
You can get a Space Cowboy hat?
It depends on what it looks like. And if you've seen the first iteration of it, it's a faceless space helmet with a circle around it.
Looks awesome.
Okay.
Looks great.
I'm going to go with my gut feeling is what I mentioned. One of my favorite logos of all time is the Quad City River Bandits, and I'm going to take the Quad City River Bandits.
That logo is very good. That was a great draft pick at number one. The River Bandits, the logo is great. The nickname's good, too. All right, Brendan, who's yours?
So I admittedly didn't look too closely at logos. Good prep. I'm just going. Well, I looked at names. I looked at names, and I swear I have this on my list. It was number one already, even though Joel mentioned it. I've got to go with the Rocket City Trash Pandas.
Yeah.
It doesn't get better than that. And by the way, Rocket City, it's Madison, Alabama.
Yeah, it's Alabama. I had no Arkansas idea. Or Alabama. I had seen it when it came out because we have the Pope family, Lauren Pope and her husband, that live down in Beaumont. And they were massive fans of that logo.
I mean, I didn't even look at the logo. I love the name. I like some of the out there names.
I do too. I like a name. Same reason I like the Space Cowboys here. I like names that mean something for the geographical location of where they play. So with the two picks that I have on the swing here, Lansing Lugnuts, General Motors, very big there. Lugnuts, we all know what a lugnut is. And the lugnut name is great. And to stay in the theme with the second pick, first pick of the second round, the Modesto Nuts. The Modesto area is a
seems
big
like
nut
you've got
community.
A theme going here.
Hey,
in
hey,
more ways than
I'm just
one.
Saying. I'm just
yesterday
saying.
Yesterday it was the D, and today we're just all about the nuts.
Let's go watch the nuts play tonight. So Lansing Lug Nuts, Modesto Nuts are my two picks. Brendan, it's back to you.
Okay. Man, I got a couple really good choices here. I think I'm going to get some hate for this one, but I don't care. The Binghamton Rumble Ponies. They didn't just want the ponies. I wouldn't be here for the ponies. I don't know what a Rumble Pony is. But I like it.
You know why it's called the Rumble Pony?
Not a clue. I am the opposite of you. I don't care.
All right. Well, then I won't
tell
you.
No, I mean, I tell the story, but it has nothing to do with my pick.
there's something like they're big like in carousels for some reason. Where in Binghamton, and because ponies on a carousel, that's how they somehow made the connection.
It's a cool story.
That's how they made the connection. All right, Joel, you got your two picks here because you're on the swing.
I'm trying to. I would say that one of the ones that I always liked was the Chattanooga Lookouts.
Okay.
I like the Chattanooga Lookouts because it had the big Google eyes that are used on emojis now in text messages.
I like how we're all drafting for different reasons.
But yeah, but it was, a very cool logo. It was the C. I have the hat. It's a C with the big Google eyes in it.
Yeah.
And I like that.
That is a good logo. You're right.
So I'm going to go that way with the Chattanooga Lookouts. And then...
You have a theme too, Bandits and Lookouts. What are you doing at night?
Do I?
Yeah, what's your last pick here?
Well, I've got a couple.
I know. I over-prepped this. I have 12 names on my list.
I have about a 20-team big board myself.
Ridiculous.
Man. All right, let me get away from my theme. I'm going to go with the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs.
That's a very good pick. They were my fifth best available at this moment.
Yeah, I think that, you know what, you can go a lot of ways, but again, from a logo perspective, how do you go wrong with an iron pig?
Do you know why they're the iron pigs?
Pig iron, which is used in the manufacturing of steel.
Yep. Ah! Yep, very good. That's why they were on my big board, is because, again, it means something. Brendan, back to you.
I have way too many things on my list. This is so difficult to come with my last one here. I might go a little bit less creative on a name here, and just one that speaks to me personally. The Montgomery Biscuits.
Solid. They were. I did some prep on Montgomery, but just the biscuits mean nothing. I think it was a fan vote why they're called the Biscuits, too, by the way.
It sounds like a troll job.
It's a cool logo.
I'm a food guy at heart, so how could I not take the biscuits?
Yeah. Good point.
With the last pick, I'm going Omaha Storm Chasers. Yeah. Like, it's so good for the region. People's chasing those storms. We've all seen the movie Twister. I'm going Omaha Storm Chasers. What are your favorite nicknames? 713-780-3776.
Can I give honorable mention to the Las Vegas 51s?
Solid because of the aliens.
Yep, yeah, that's what I like.
The Akron Rubber Ducks aren't bad because of the deep rubber industry. The El Paso Chihuahuas were on my big board as well because they're in the Chihuahuan Desert. Mm-hmm. The Albuquerque Isotypes, because that was what the Simpsons baseball team was called.
Yeah.
And another fan vote.
I like, I'm thinking about minor league hats I had over the years. The Rancho Cucamonga Quakes.
That's a really good one.
I like that one.
So Joel's got Quad City River Bandits, Chattanooga Lookouts, Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs. Brendan's got the Rocket City Trash Pandas, the Binghamton Rumble Ponies, and the Montgomery Biscuits. I got the Lansing Lung Nuts, Modesto Nuts, and the Omaha Storm Chasers. Who won the draft? 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Mickey is on the line. Mickey, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
Hey,
Mickey.
Hey, how you doing, man? Hey, I was listening to your show. Yeah, I forget who that was. That's not Steve Miller Band. I just looked it up. Steve Miller Band the song they made with the title. It says, some people call me a space cowboy.
Yes, the actual title of the song, Mickey, you're right, is The Joker.
Yeah, I'm going to concede this debate, Mickey, because of you, because you called in with the truth and you laid down the law, and because you are correct, you are right, Mickey. Thank you for that, and this is my concession speech. I'm bowing out of the debate. Joel, you win it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Way to go, Nick Casario. Your approval call, rating, Mickey, just went way up.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. What are some other teams that we missed that you absolutely love? That we missed.
How about the Savannah Sand Gnats?
Not a fan.
No?
Not a fan of that one.
Okay.
No, I'm not a fan of that one.
Because I just did a quick Google search. I just did it just now. There's a couple other ones that I was like, you know what? I don't know how appropriate it is to, like, when you're looking for the connection to the city.
Yeah.
But some of them were...
That's the beauty of nicknames, right?
I'm thinking logo.
Like, you went logo. Brendan just went cool names. I wanted, like, the symbolism with the city. I think that's the great thing of nicknames. All right, when we come back, the Panthers are so thirsty for Deshaun Watson. I tell you why next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about some serious putt-putt golf. That's right. You can call it putt-putt golf. You can call it mini golf. I'm going to call it Pixar putt because Pixar putt is exactly what you should be doing this weekend or one night this week when you're looking for something to do, whether it be on date night or someplace to hang out with your friends for a couple of hours, or maybe it's a place you take the whole family. Pixar putt is set up now through March 20th at Discovery Green. And from the kids' perspective, it's fantastic because it's all based on their favorite characters from their favorite Pixar movies. Toy Story, The Incredibles, Monsters, Inc., Finding Nemo, and so much more. It's an 18-hole course, all interactive, all fun, all inspired by the stories, characters, and Pixar movies. And it's going to be fun for the whole family or a perfect place for a date night. Because you think about it, you take a date to a movie, you're not talking to her for 2 hours while you're watching the flick, and then you're trying to get to know her to see if there's going to be a second date. Well, while you're playing putt-putt golf, you guys can talk and laugh and get to know each other while you're still playing putt-putt golf, having some fun. Go to PixarPutt.com for tickets and information. It's the only way you get the tickets. They're available online. And because they're in Discovery Green, you're just a stone's throw away from restaurants and bars and other places you can go after getting some golf in and playing some putt-putt. It's absolutely fantastic. It's the ultimate pop-up mini golf experience. And again, it's only till March 20th, so check it out right now. PixarPutt.com. Get tickets and information. And we'll see you at Discovery Green.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
A lot of good texts coming in. 713-780-3776. Nicknames that we missed. Melito, the Toledo Mud Hens. That's a pretty good one. Anyways, have you seen how...
Wait. Let's clear this up.
Okay.
Let's clear this up.
Let's clear it up.
King of Twitch is the latest after we got a call on this. I will also eat some crow and say that in my being adamant about the fact that that was not the Steve Miller Band and singing that song, we had several people point out the fact that that actually was the Steve Miller Band, but it wasn't a very popular song, but they did have... that song, which is entitled Space Cowboy, but
right.
The one that everybody quotes the lyric from, the song is actually called The Joker.
Yeah, we'll have to play that song a little bit later. That's funny how quite the coincidence. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. If you listen to the Killer Bees enough, you'll know that sometimes we're both wrong and sometimes we were both right. Because we were in the same exact song.
Yep.
We were both right, both wrong. All right, Panthers are thirsty for Deshaun Watson. And this is what the Texans are going to be rooting for, right? To get as many thirsty teams for Deshaun Watson as possible. Did you see who the Panthers had an interview with for their offensive coordinator job?
I did not.
Tim Kelly, the man who orchestrated the worst offense in the NFL, historically bad offense in the NFL. They were almost dead last in every single metric on the offensive side of the football. Yet Matt Rhule is interviewing this dude to be his offensive coordinator. Do you remember why the Houston Texans kept Tim Kelly around last offseason?
I sure do. That's because one DW4, Deshaun Watson, liked him a whole lot and liked the fact that, hey, you know what, the calls, the plays that he calls were right down my alley. Oops. So, in a lot of ways,
why did you say whoops?
Well, because there were a lot of other alleys that were involved in something. Never mind. So, well, you asked, so I answered. I think that's why Tim Kelly was kept around for an extra year. In the slim chance, but just in case, Deshaun ends up still being our quarterback, we got his guy as OC.
Look, Matt Rhule is desperate. We know that. Like, he was on the verge of being fired this season. He fired Joe Brady in the middle of the season. And look, a lot of it was because of injuries. Christian McCaffrey got injured. They invested a lot in Sam Darnold. That backfired. Whenever he got hurt, they brought in Cam Newton. No one really expected them to win with Cam Newton, if we're being honest. There was a reason that he was a free agent and got cut by the Patriots before the season started. But Matt Rhule is desperate to keep his job. If he has a bad season next year, dude's going to be fired. So he has to find somebody, and there's been rumors that Bill O'Brien has been interviewed for the offensive coordinator job in Carolina, and the mindset there is perhaps they make the run for Deshaun Watson. We know that at the NFL trade deadline on November 2nd that the Carolina Panthers were willing to trade for Deshaun Watson even without like any insurances, without any securities to the legal stuff that Deshaun Watson had going on. So now you have a guy going into the make or break season – He's interviewing Bill O'Brien. He's interviewing Tim Kelly. Like, I'm not reading too much into this, that this is obviously a play for Deshaun Watson to get him to waive his no-trade clause and eventually go to Carolina if they can do enough things to make themselves attractive to one Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that that's the only reason why he's doing it, because obviously he needs NFL experience, because the experiment with Brady didn't work out, and he is a college guy. And so he needs to kind of infuse his entire coaching staff with more NFL experience. But it obviously makes perfect sense, right? Because like you said, he's on a short leash. He's trying to prove himself. This doesn't make any difference financially. He's set for life. He's gotten his contracts. He's taken care of. And if he walks away from this situation, he's going to be paid for multiple years. But as it relates to him going forward and being an NFL viable candidate for coaching.
You're talking about Rule.
Yeah.
Okay.
As opposed to just being known as a good college coach that is worthy of a job, he's going to have to get it right this coming season. And if there's any chance, because he knows his biggest issue is he is clueless with his quarterbacks. Yeah, and giving the extra year to Darnold was a mistake. Bringing Cam back was a mistake. And everything else is kind of on the table for being a team that could flirt with a playoff spot. But if they don't get quarterback right next season, he's probably going to be out.
It's always desperation, right? Like, desperate teams do desperate things, and Matt Rule's in a situation where he's desperate. We saw this with Bill O'Brien. Bill O'Brien got desperate to protect Deshaun Watson, so what did he do? They teamed up to trade for Laremy Tunsil in this desperation move. We saw Bill O'Brien trade future picks for, like, backup running backs as well. So whenever you get these coaches that are looking like they're going to be fired pretty soon if they don't win, they do things that, you know, they might overpay for Deshaun Watson. They might overpay for certain players that they feel can save their job. And as a general manager, in Nick Caserio's point of view, he's got to be willing to strike on that. He's got to be able to, you know, find that desperate dude and try to get that guy to pay for Deshaun Watson for more than what he's worth going into the offseason. And the big thing for the Houston Texans, obviously, is to create a lot of Carolina Panthers, right? Like, okay, Panthers are thirsty for him. How about the Giants? If they bring in Brian Flores, how thirsty can they be for him? Would Miami still be interested? Philadelphia is an interesting name to me. Jeffrey Laura, their general manager today, like he says, oh, Jalen Hurts is our guy. Like, what else is he going to say? He's under contract going forward. You're going to back up a dude who could potentially be your starting quarterback next year if you can't improve that position. But that's the critical thing, I think, this offseason for Nick Caserio to earn his money is to create that demand around the league.
Well, and the more you don't have to create it, it's already a pre-existing thing that you can kind of go to. It's a conversation starter, right? If I'm Nick Caserio, I'm going to pick up the phone and I'm going to go, hey, Brian Flores, the minute you land, wherever your next job is, I know you wanted our guy. If you still want our guy, let's talk. You know, if Tim Kelly does get an OC job, hey, if that team needs a quarterback, let's talk. You need more inroads to more really solid discussions, and you need more sweeteners for Deshaun because he has that no trade, which is makes everything so volatile. Mm-hmm. Like I said, you can go three quarters of the way down the road, and you think you're going to be close to a deal, and then if he has the ability to blow it up and veto it, then what have you really done except for wasted time? So you need some of these sweeteners attached to some of these teams so that there are more teams that could potentially get involved.
Yeah. The other way to look at the Carolina thing, too, is like if Bill O'Brien is linked to the offensive coordinator job for the Panthers and does ultimately get that job. We talked about this the other day with the Houston Texans and the four guys that they've interviewed. Brian Flores, Vince Lombardi's grandson, Joe Lombardi, Hines Ward, and then the latest, Jonathan Gannon from the Philadelphia Eagles. Like, how many of those are real head coaching interviews? Like, yeah, by definition, you're interviewing for their head coaching spot, but how many of those guys are realistic candidates? I think you look at that Carolina offensive coordinator interview with Tim Kelly, and you can look at that the same way. Because if it is Bill O'Brien, it might be Matt Rule getting to know Tim Kelly for like a position coach. Can you be our O-line coach or receivers coach, whatever the case may be? I look at that maybe as a getting to know the guy a little bit more before you commit to like offensive coordinator Bill O'Brien and the entire staff that he would bring in.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Bill O'Brien, I don't care about as much, but we know Bill O'Brien was a fan of Deshaun Watson too. But Bill O'Brien, to me, as I've said all along, he just belongs in college football. And I think he should just stay there. Because, and I've been adamant about that, Jeremy, because of the fact that he is so hell-bent on being a dictator. He's so control-based. And the only way you can truly get away with what he wanted to get away with the Houston Texans is in college. Because even if it's only for 1 year or for a couple of years in the case of football, The player needs the coach more than the coach needs the players. And Bill O'Brien's shtick isn't going to fly in the NFL when guys make more. They're more important to the franchise. And so, therefore, they have more pull. And so, he got away with it once. He turned it into an unbelievable deal personally for himself. But he also drove a franchise into the ground. And I don't think that any NFL owner, if they're just wise enough to pick up the phone like we say Caserio should be doing in a lot of ways, if owners talk at all, there's no way. And obviously, if Robert McNair was still open, still alive, he might have more to say than Cal, who seems to be tuned out. But I think that just picking up the phone and talking to people that were around that situation will tell you, and Rick Smith will be the first one to tell you, look, that dude is not made for the NFL in terms of what he wants and how he wants it.
Now, my pushback with that, and I hate that I'm defending Bill O'Brien, is that the demise didn't come until he started controlling the roster. I mean, he won four division titles into six seasons and then was fired in his seventh season. So, I mean, if you get a feel that Bill O'Brien doesn't need the control, he doesn't need to buy the groceries if he's the one that's doing the cooking, like Bill Parcells said, I think that if you have that separation, that Bill O'Brien could work.
See, but Jeremy, you say that, but that's not entirely true either, because before he got total control, he got controlled when Rick Smith was fired or whatever, the parting of the ways happened.
Sure.
That he would have a say-so to get his guy as the GM, a la Brian Gain. And then Brian Gain, the minute that they butted heads because Brian Gain didn't agree with Bill O'Brien started pulling a Jack Easterby, stabbing him in the back and getting him set up so he could be fired and then let him go.
Right.
So I think that even before he got control, he was a power-hungry, power freak that was doing everything that's my way or the highway. And if you disagree with me, you're going to be gone.
Well, that's all the same story. The Texan story is the power-hungry Bill O'Brien. And the only way that he could work in the NFL is if he does not, you know, crave that power again in the NFL. Like, if he wants that, then it's going to be the same story again, just like we saw with
the
Texans.
But if it's in his DNA, do you really expect – sure, he's going to say all the right things in the interview process to say, I've changed, I've learned.
I mean –
but I think it's only a matter of time before he gets right back to it.
I would like to think that if I failed miserably at a previous stop and I had the second opportunity, that I would do a lot of self-evaluation to understand why it failed and then fix that.
You think Bill's going to do that?
I mean, that's the question no one knows.
We saw the same tantrums in the booth we saw when he was with the Texans. We saw the same kind of BS. I think, you know, like I keep going back to, a tiger doesn't change his stripes. He's going to be the same guy. It may take a little longer. And the other thing I don't like is things like why he traded DeAndre Hopkins. Because he didn't practice hard? Because he had baby mamas around? You know, that's the kind of thing that, you know what, as long as he plays on Sundays, and someone pushed back the last time I said this, and I'll say it again, you had the best receiver in the NFL. If you want to tell me that he was one of the top three, fine, so be it. It's a matter of opinion.
Top tier.
But you had one of the top three receivers in the game, and the reason why you got rid of him wasn't because of performance, wasn't because of the production on the field. It was because of baby mamas and his ability to want to practice on a daily basis. No one wants to practice. I hate to break it to you. And no franchise that values their superstar pushes them to practice hard.
And on top of it, the return wasn't good. Like, you'd be in a lot better shape if you got, like, a Stephon Diggs return that Minnesota got with Buffalo, because then they turned it to Jefferson. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Coming up next, why hiring a Patriots guy is the right choice. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.